Welcome to Press On Podcast with Mike Woodruff, where Mike and invited guests share insights to cultivate a biblical perspective and thoughtful resilience in challenging times.
Welcome back to the Press On Podcast. My name is Mike Woodruff, and today I have a chance to talk with Katie Schnack. She is an author, and she has a new book coming out in September. Katie has written a number of things, been writing for a while. She's also a book publicist. Her first big book was The Gap Decade, when you're technically an adult but don't really feel like it. The book we are talking about is Everything Is Not Fine, Finding Strength When Life Gets Annoyingly Difficult. She's had articles appear in a lot of different magazines, grew up in Minnesota and Texas. She and her husband lived in a 400 square foot apartment in New York, or New Jersey, I guess, for a while. They now live in West Palm Beach with on a lot more than 400 feet, over an acre. Five chickens, three goats, a senior mini pony, and two children, Sonny and Shepherd. So, Katie, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So, normally my first question to authors is just, you know, what's your book about? But I'm anxious to know a little bit about how Shepherd is doing. So can we start there? And you're going to have to obviously explain to people why I'm asking about Shepherd, and to describe, I don't know whether it's pronounced Vectoral.
That's right. Yeah, I know. So a lot of my book, Everything Is Not Fine, deals with our medical journey with our son, who was born with a very rare condition called Vectoral Association. It's an acronym. It stands for a bunch of different parts of the body, which can, if you have three or more of those parts, it's technically you're confirmed to have Vectoral. Some people have all of them. Some people have three or more. But yes, Shepherd was born with Vectoral, and he is 4 years old now, and he's doing fine. He just this summer had two surgeries. Last summer, he had spinal cord surgery. We're still dealing with kind of everything as it comes. But that was kind of just the main heart behind why I wanted to write Everything Is Not Fine, because as I was walking through this journey of kind of understanding his diagnosis, it was also right in the middle of COVID, where we really kind of got into the meat of it. I was just really grappling with, you know, what do you do when there's no end to your suffering in sight, right? Like if you have a child with a permanent disability or differences, or if you're going through a pandemic when you never ever know when it's going to be over, you know, like how do you find joy within that? So that's kind of the heart of it, but he is doing good in, you know, in all sense of the word, and we're kind of just taking it day by day, as any parent with a medically challenged child does. So
Yeah, well, I gotta tell you, the people who are listening to this who know me know I do not cry very often. And your book was as I was trying to imagine that we have a new granddaughter, and so I'm just sort of you get sensitive and new. She's now 13 months old. She was with us last night, and so in the last couple of days, as I was reading your book, trying to imagine watching, which I don't know if it's harder for parents or harder for grandparents, but just to watch and imagine our kids going through this with a child, it's all sort of overwhelming. So is that how you would describe this book? Is that you're writing, processing your own sort of challenges? And I guess who exactly were you writing for? Are you writing for young moms? Are you writing for young couples with special needs children? Or was it just, you know, everybody's got their own challenges. They come in very different shapes and sizes. You're just writing.
Yeah, that's a great question. I wish I was writing like specifically for parents of kids with Vectoral, but it is so narrow. It's bananas. Like I know like four of them online. So it's not just what I wanted it to be was not just highlight like this very unique, strange condition, and not just highlight people with children with medical needs or anything like that. I always say to my friends, like, they'll text and be like, oh, my child has a fever. I know it's not anything what you're going through, but it is. The thing is, it's like, if you're a parent, your body is so hardwired to protect your child. Like, I don't care if they have a fever, a scratch on their leg, or they're going in for surgery, like, it hurts, right? And it's really hard as a parent. So it's kind of not just that, but it's not just someone with a medically challenged child, but anybody who's kind of finding like long-term challenges. Again, like I do talk a lot about the pandemic in there, because when I started writing it, it was just at that cusp, but we're all really starting to like come back into the sunshine and be like, what just happened? And just like kind of, you know, think through what we just went through, like a collective trauma, right? So it really, the heart behind everything is not fine. It's just, it's for anybody who is enduring long-term challenges where they may not necessarily be able to fix them. I'm not the kind of writer who will be like, do these three things and your life will be a lot better, right? Because like, I don't know, like, I just feel more like I just wanted to walk alongside people who are also going through challenges, whether that be a sick child, whether it be just a tough time in their marriage, whatever it is, and just help them know that they're not alone, right? And walking through that and kind of stumbling through it too. So it's really just for anybody, anyone facing hardships and grappling with their faith, grappling with, you know, how to keep going the next day, no matter what degree that falls under. So
you say, I mean, you have a chapter, I don't know if this was the title, but this was obviously one of the taglines, don't make it a thing until it's a thing. Mm-hmm. Which I thought, I mean, you had, your book has got a lot of, you know, punchy little statements like that, you know, being a joy vampire, hiding behind houseplants, whatever, boss moves. So the one that I thought had real, just had some gravitas for me, don't make it a thing until it's a thing. And in that chapter, you talk about, and I mean, you just mentioned this, but maybe say a little bit more here. Learning to live in the space when you realize it might not ever get easier, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that, so it's kind of twofold. Those are two things that people in my life spoke into me when we were early on in our medical journey. The first, don't make it a thing till it's a thing, was from my aunt. She had two-pound preemie twins back in the 80s. And like, as a parent now, looking back, like I finally am able to realize like, wow, like that is crazy and scary. And 2 pounds, like, you know, like I've known my cousins my whole life, but like now as a mom, I'm like, oh my goodness, it really kind of clicked. But she would tell me like, so people were saying a lot of things when we were first getting diagnosis from Shipper Shepherd and all these things, but like she was the one who's kind of really walked through it before. And she just said, just don't make it a thing until it's a thing, which that means like when I'm driving to a doctor's appointment, there's a million things. I'm like, they could say this, they could say this, they could say this, but also Mike, they could say everything's fine. You know what I mean? And like, that's also a possibility. So my husband and I, we actively kind of like fight for that now, to like battle against our own minds and thinking like all of the what ifs and being like, okay, right now it's not that, like it could be, but it could not be. And just kind of live in that as much as we can, to try to hold on to as much peace as we can until we really know that final outcome. So we just really try to not make it a thing till it's a thing. And that can be with anything, right? Like our car broke down last week, like immediately we're like, oh my gosh, this is going to be a nightmare. It was fine. Like it worked out. And so like, I think so much of our energy is put on preemptively worrying about things when you don't have to. And so that, and then the other part of that was something that somebody I connected with in the Vector community online, she said something to me and it was really freeing for me, because we at a point were like, oh, like maybe, you know, Shepherd can be like fixed and everything will be okay and whatever, but it's not that. Like the nature of his condition is just like something could pop up at any time and we could be back in the hospital or back doing surgery. And so like, and what she said was like something when she was talking about her own child was like, it might not ever get easier, but you can get used to it, right? So like, and I think what that is just building up resilience, right? In the face of like unending challenges, and just looking at how far my husband and I have come in terms of parenting at this kind of extreme level, like it still is really, really hard to go to a doctor. But we have like a tiny little sleep study for him this week and we're still feeling anxiety over it, right? Like, but we're used to it. Like we know what to do. We have processes in place. We're like, okay, let's do this. Let's do this. Let's trust in the Lord. Let's ask our people to pray. And like, you know, so it's not easier for a parent heart sometimes, but you can get used to it and you can get stronger.
So you taught, I mean, you talk or you write, I guess, in the book about several of the ways that you are coping or processing, managing the challenges, the stress. And one of the things you talk about is a friend, a neighbor, Melly. Is that how you say her name?
Yep, Melly. Yep.
Melly the firefighter. So Melly becomes a good friend and you talk about that, which is fun. I'm always telling people they need 2 a.m. friends. You need somebody who not only could you call at 2 o'clock in the morning if you needed to, but if you didn't call them, they would say, how could this have happened? And you didn't call me.
Like, I'm always saying that after. She always does that to me. She'll tell me something. I'm like, why didn't you call me? Yes, I love that, Mike.
Well, so I'm a big, and as a pastor, I see just the dramatically different kinds of outcomes when somebody gets knocked down, and we're going to get knocked down. I had a big medical event 10 years ago, and I'm alive because of my family and friends. But one of the things, a psychiatrist came in at one point to see me because he said 80% of the people that have what you have get depressed. But I don't think that's going to happen to you. And I go, oh, well, why not? Because, well, I'm just noting your support system. It's obvious who's coming in and how many people are caring for you. And there's times I go to the hospital and I'm calling up the church was an afterthought. There's the small group is there, friends are there, neighbors are there, family's there. There's so many people there. It's like, yeah, okay, my work here is done. I'm not needed. There's other times when I think, okay, I'm likely the only one that's stopping by today, and I'll be the only one stopping by tomorrow, and you know what the outcomes are going to be. So I love the friendship that you have. What advice? I mean, maybe this is what Melly did right. Maybe it's not Melly that factors into this, but what advice would you give to friends of parents with special needs children, or maybe it's not special needs children, but just friends whose friends are going through the ringer. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be, as you say, we're not going to be able to fix this, at least not anytime soon. So, you know, we can look at the book of Job and say, Job had friends. Mm-hmm. And I always say Job's friends, you know, they get a bad rap for trying to talk to Job, but they sat with Job for a week. I'm like, wow, that's a pretty big commitment. I would feel entitled to say some things if I had just sat there quietly for a week. But you know, what they said was not helpful. So what has been helpful for you and your husband to hear or to experience? How do you coach people who are walking alongside someone who's in a really difficult spot?
That's a really lovely question. I've also had some really close people in my life pass away. And the kind of like grief we felt when dealing with kind of, you know, understanding what we're dealing with, putting my son through surgeries, I always think of that grief when my best friend died when I was young, because it's like, I don't know, it's like these things that people walk through that cannot be fixed, right? So like you're saying, you want people that you care about, like, they naturally want to try to fix it and help it. But then when you're faced with something that just can't be fixed, sometimes they just don't know what to do, right? But like, I know like for Melly especially, it's just being there, like at 2 a.m. if needed, just listening, right? It's just been so, so important. Also too, like my group of ladies at my church, like when we went to Shepherd's first surgery, just completely like meal trains, like giving us like presents for him in the hospital, just like things like that. When you can't fix something, you can walk alongside somebody, you know, and I think that's what it is. And the things that have been like the most off-putting is when people are in my ear trying to like, you know, give me those like well-meaning Bible verses or like things that we've all heard a million times as Christians. But it's just, when your heart is so broken and so, you know, like, you know that there's nothing you can do for the foreseeable future to fix that. Like, it's not like those are kind of weak band-aids, right? So just being there and being able to let me like lament and like talk and just, you know, being sad along with me, I think it does more than people can realize.
How old is your daughter?
She's 7.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you're in the, I mean, you take away Shepherd's specific challenges. You've got another 10 years of, I think we used to call them when we were there, I mean, I'm 60. Mm-hmm. When we were there, we called them the 3 M's, marriages, mortgages, and minivans. And it was,
that literally describes my life right now.
Yeah. And it does. I mean, I say to parents who are just going through, there's no downtime. There's, you know, all kinds of things are going on, and you're usually in a phase of your career, which it's taking a lot of time. Mm-hmm. You don't have much money. Kids have got all kinds of practices and rehearsals and homework and other things. There's a lot of this that just gets easier. There's a lot of it that gets easier. But as you're saying, some of it doesn't get easier. And we have, we need friends, and we need the right perspective. So I was intrigued by your discussing about the writing life and the dramatic contrast between what you expected the writing life to be like and what it is and what it is, because you've got a nice, quiet, reflective time period with a cup of coffee that you sit down and you right. can gather your thoughts. And it's not like that. And I am aware, in part because pastoral ministry in general is, it's supposed to be this reflective life. And I try to fight for being more reflective than most. But yeah, it's just a lot of, it's meetings and budgets and performance reviews and scheduling. And, you know, and I had a friend who was single, and he would always call me and say, "Hey, you know this book?" And he mentioned some book that he just read. And I knew of the title of the book, but right. I had not read the book. And he goes, "You haven't read this book?" And I go, "No." He goes, "How could you not have read this book?" And he painted houses. Single guy painted houses. And he would always talk about his, 2 hour quiet time and, how he had spent, 3 hours reading this book the last night.
That sounds really lovely.
Yeah. And I'm like, dude, I'm trying to figure out if the van with mm-hmm. the youth group has insurance when it goes into Mexico. That's what I'm doing.
Right.
And I don't think it does. So I'm not done figuring out what we're going to do. So there's that. And that, but I really was, I guess I would say my attitude changed when I realized that C.S. Lewis's life, which I envisioned, he was a bachelor, and I don't want to be single at all.
No.
I love my wife, and I'm not, but when you got young kids and it's crazy and it's loud and your stuff is always getting trashed that C.S. Lewis, he's this Oxford professor. He sits around, drinking coffee, talking with smart people, writing books and rewriting them.
Right.
Well, that wasn't actually his life at all. I mean, he was caring for Mrs. Moore, who was, a very difficult person to be around. His brother was an alcoholic. He didn't get tenure at Oxford until he was in his 60s. So he's grading papers all the time. I mean, it was just very hard. And he wrote in the gaps.
Right.
And that's been your experience. You're writing 5 minutes here and you're racing between medical appointments and kickboxing classes or whatever else mm-hmm. it is that you're doing and writing. And are you finding, is that getting easier for you, or you just go, no, that's life in a broken world and I've made peace with it?
I think that is life in a broken world. And I think it's important to make peace with it, because I feel like when you feel called to something, especially called something by God, right, there's going to be so many things that are easily to distract you, right, from what is your calling. I have a million things that I could put in front of, writing or what I feel like is my ministry in a way. A million things, like you're saying, like just hearing you talk about like life. I'm like, yes, that's my life. And it's so refreshing to hear it from a perspective like that. Cause I'm like, I forget sometimes how crazy it is because we get so entangled in it. Right. But I feel like there's always 1,001 excuses that you can put in front of what you feel like you're really called to do. And it never is, you're never like, I think back when Kyle and I didn't have kids and, you know, like there was still things that was distracting me from writing or doing what I felt like I was called to do. So when is it going to change? Never. Like, never. When I'm retired, well, maybe then I'll be distracted by my grandkids. Like, I don't know, you know? So I feel like you need to accept that and really like seek after what not only feel called to do, but what kind of just brings joy to your life. The reason that I wrote about that particular thing in the book, because when I had been wanting a book contract, I wanted to write a book for so long, like 10 years I was working towards it. And in Everything Is Not Fine, I say that I finally got the book contract and I signed the contract in March of 2020, right? And so it was like banana town and like everything fell apart and my kids were home. I was still working full time, thank the Lord, from home remote, which I have been doing for a while. But I had to be like, okay, well, I have to do this now, but how? And it wasn't glamorous, but I found that taking 15 minutes, waking up a little bit earlier, staying up a little bit later, just like literally taking time at noon on a Wednesday when you have, you know, what else are you doing that's productive at noon on a Wednesday? Those were the things which you would think it would have been an extra burden. It was actually became what filled me up and gave me happiness and joy, even though we were kind of walking through the early days of the pandemic. So I just wanted to put that chapter in there to encourage people that like oftentimes the thing that you think you're like, I don't have time, like how am I ever going to fit it in? Usually those are the things that if you do carve out the time, even if it's small, they give you more energy anyway, right? Like if you take 15 minutes in the morning to write or to do whatever it is that you love to do, like you're usually happier and more productive the rest of the day anyway. So I just think that like, if God has put something on your heart that you're called to do, don't let, you know, busyness just be the only thing. Yet, like everything you said, like life is legitimately difficult when you have small children and a full-time job and a mortgage and a minivan and all that things. But there's still space that can be made and it can fill you up and kind of keep you going. So I just want to encourage people to think about that.
Yeah, it's often the unfinished tasks. If you get your work done, you go home with energy. If you don't get it done, if you're not working on the things that, you know, bring value and purpose, or you got lots of incompleted tasks, you go home and you're exhausted. So pushing through and getting some of those things done and winning can bring joy. So let me pivot here. I did not read your earlier book, mm-hmm. but I'm intrigued. So you're mid-30s now. Mm-hmm. When did you write that book? So you wrote a book on the gap decade, wrote a book on not feeling like an adult when you sort of are an adult or you're trying to figure out what it means to be an adult. Talk about that book for a minute. And then my follow-up question is, how do you reflect on what you said now? Like how are you 10 years out and you're thinking differently about that? Thinking differently about yourself? Not at all?
Yeah, that's a great question. So that was the book that I started writing in March of 2020. So I was past, like technically the gap decade, I was 32, I think at that point. And
you define the gap decade as
it's like 20s to 30s. Yeah. I always say like the gap decade, the book, it covers the season of like graduating college, like our first baby, like graduating college, marriage, like starting a family. It's kind of that weird place where you're just trying to like acquire things and figure out your life and figure out your footing. And the reason that I wanted to write it, even though I was a little bit past it, because as I was walking through it, I would look around at all my peers and everybody was going through the same stuff, right? Like, yes, we were like in our 20s and whatever, but it also was hard. Like it was hard to like figure out jobs and taxes and like marriage and like trying to start a family and all of that. Like it's such a special, strange time that's so fleeting. So I just wanted to kind of like lend a little bit of reflection on that time for other people who are walking through it. I did find too, like a lot of people who read it that were older, they would still look back and read it and be like, I felt that way too 30 years ago. You know what I mean? And it was really interesting to me to see that. And a lot of people too were like, I have children in their 20s and I did not realize that like, this is what they're feeling, you know? So I just wanted to kind of have a voice for that decade. And I don't know, like, I think a lot of the lessons I learned during my gap decade, it's a lot about patience, like waiting for the Lord's timing, right? That the Lord will provide for you when you do not see a way how. And just kind of like trusting, like if you're called somewhere and you have no idea what that's going to look like, just trusting the Lord. I'm still dealing with all of those things, right? Like those are all themes. Like we're always, you know, waiting for something or like, you know, like again, like our car broke down this summer, like both of them did. And we're like, we don't know how this is going to work out financially, but it did better than we can, you know, a better plan for ourselves just because of the Lord. So it's like those themes are themes that I think are worth looking at and reflecting on because they are things that continue to carry you through, you know, forever. So that's, I wanted to write the gap decade, just kind of like put a little bit of a lens on that.
Well, thanks. Are you, you might, maybe you're familiar, a Berkeley professor, Meg Jay, has a TED Talk out called 30 is not the new 20. When she talks about the 20s as the trend, as the pivotal decade. Mm-hmm. And she just says, we just keep telling people, yeah, you know, you graduate from college later, you get married later, life starts later. She says, well, not really. The biological clock still ticks and you can't burn through your 20s without doing the kinds of things that you need to do and work through that and work through this confusion. Because if you wait until you're in your mid-30s for this to happen, a lot of what you were thinking was going to happen is now no longer going to happen. Anyway, that's aside. I have five final questions for you. The last one is, which, what are you working on next? Because I'm sure you're working on something next. But let's start. These are the standard five questions I ask. Short answers work. What brings you hope? What keeps you going? You've got big challenges, extra additional hard challenges because of some family dynamics. So what brings you hope and joy and keeps you going?
Jesus. Can I say the Sunday school answer? But it's true. No, but I love that question. Because a lot of what I talk about in Everything Is Not Fine, it's like, how do you find hope when like things on paper are, you know, hopeless? Like the fact, like walking up to the surgeries, my son has had like 3 surgeries now, was like some of the darkest days of my life. I'm a worrier, I have anxiety, like it's very hard. So it was a real, like, what do you do with that? Because you still have to keep going forward. There's nothing you can do to change your circumstance. What do you do? So I think just like at those moments, and I say in like the last chapter, right before my son's spinal cord surgery, like I felt like I was at the very bottom of my bucket, right? Like I was like, I feel horrible. I am terrified. Like there's nothing, like I'm at the bottom here. But like, I saw Jesus so clearly there in that moment. And what gives me hope now is knowing that like, I was at what at that time was my lowest and he was there. There's nothing he's not going to be there for me for. And so like, I know that whatever it is that's next, it's not going to be easy. Like, obviously my big this summer with these 2 new surgeries, they were harder than the spinal cord surgery. And I had to grapple with my faith with that and being like, yo, I thought we were done with all this stuff, but we're not. But yet, like, despite now that we're on the other side of that, like the Lord has shown up, the Lord has brought me through, the Lord has literally helped my husband and I just get up in the morning and, you know, parent and just do all the things we have to do. So it's just Jesus, like, because things can get really grim. And if you might not always feel like, you know, sometimes you might be a little frustrated with the Lord, but he's always there and he's shown his faithfulness time and again. So that's it. Just the Lord. Got nothing else. So.
What, if anything, keeps you up at night? You say you're a worrier. Mm-hmm.
Well, you what know, melatonin helps not keep you up at night anymore. You know, that is a great question too. I do in Everything Is Not Fine, I have this section where I talk about, I literally, like, as we would, like, this was early on in Shepherd's life. He was under the age of one and we were at cardiologist appointment, like, just as, does he need heart surgery? Like, that's what we were trying to figure out, right? Which is a lot, right? For your tiny little baby. And so I would wake up at night knowing, like, next week we're going to find out. Next week I'm going to find out if I need to have my son have open heart surgery. And I would just pray, let the morning bring me word of your unfailing love, for I put my trust in you, over and over again at night, until I would fall asleep. And I think that, like, honestly, now not a lot does keep me up at night anymore, because I have walked through a lot of really hard things. And I feel like our endurance and our ability to kind of have perspective on them has really grown my mental capacity to be like, okay, this is happening, but you know what? We've been through worse. You know, like, we've been through this before and the Lord got us through, it's going to get us through again. So right now, you know, like, everything's not perfect and life isn't perfect, but I can just rest in knowing that, like, whatever comes my way, like, God will carry us through. And so that plus melatonin, I'm sleeping just fine, Mike. So that's it. But yeah.
I'm just back from Africa, so I had some melatonin trying to fight jet lag.
Yeah. So, where did you go in Africa?
I was in Ghana. We had a trip to Israel. I lead a group to Israel most summers, and then I went on. We were doing stuff in Ghana, a couple different groups. So anyway, yes.
I love that.
But yes, better, you know, better living through chemistry. I'm not always sure that's the right answer, but So I'm going to ask you, so the next question is, what's on your nightstand? And I want to make it clear that the following question is, what have you been recommending most often in the last few years? And that could be a book, a podcast, a movie, anything. But right now I'm just asking, what are you reading right now?
I wish it was something like profound and, you know,
right. We wish it was Tolstoy. We wish it was something profound. Yes.
Man, right. I'm loving, listen, I am obsessed with my Kindle. Okay. Like, my whole family goes to bed and I'm just sitting there reading my Kindle in the dark. Like, I am a huge reader and, like, my husband is not at all. And he's always like, it just blows his mind how many books I've read. He's like, I read Harry Potter 10 years ago and that's it. But I just like to read thriller novels. And I think that's okay because, you know, sometimes we need a little entertainment escape. So I've just been enjoying, it's been a summer of just thrillers.
My at night, so both Sherry and I are big readers, and at night, it's almost always fiction.
Yes.
And it cannot be anything that I'm inclined to pick up a pen and underline something.
Right. Because then you're thinking about it all. Right.
This is an illustration for this talk or this book or whatever. Mm-hmm. If I start looking around for a pen, then that's like, this book has got to get off my nightstand because I want to read a novel. Yes.
Exactly. Absolutely. I 100% am with you on that. And I think there's different seasons, right? Like, there's times where I'm like so inspired and want to, like, you know, self-help, growth, all that. But right now I'm just like, I just need a little distraction. That's all. Yep. A little relaxation.
Well, so what have you been recommending most of all? Again, book, podcast, movie, anything. You're like, people need to know about this. I'm handing this. Yeah, I did an interview yesterday or the day before with Phil Ryken, the president at Wheaton, and he's been recommending a book called Finding Faith and Energy in the Face of Dementia. I've got so many people now whose parents or they spouses have dementia. He goes, I just found an incredibly helpful book. So he said, he's written 50 books. He goes, it's nothing that I'm researching. It's not my PhD field, but that's what he's recommending. So anything, maybe yours is about kickboxing or, you know, raising pigs or whatever it is that you get going.
I am recommending to everybody to get pet pigs. That is true, Mike. They are the best and most intelligent animals I've ever owned, and I'm obsessed with them. But I don't, man, that is such a, that's such a broad question. You know, I used to be so podcast obsessed. I kind of got over it. I don't know. Like, I kind of like, it's kind of the same thing. It's like different seasons of life. I think you just need to consume different things. And right now for me, like, it's nothing that's profound. It's literally like Kyle and I need 20 minutes at the end of the night to watch Josh Gates treasure hunting shows, or like nothing good, you know, like, I don't know. Like, I can't really stomach right now, like, things telling me what to do and how to do when I'm just trying to live, you know what I mean? So
okay. I'm recommending. Final question. What are you working on next? Do you have another book project that's developing?
I love that question too. So Kyle and I actually just decided that we're going to just self-publishing. So no big hoopla, but there are literally no children's books about Bacterial Association. So, and my son, he's 4 now, and he's asked me, why do I have to go to the doctor all the time again? He's like, why doesn't Sonny have to go? And I do. And so we want to write a children's book that just kind of explains, like, because people call Vector like an invisible illness. Like, if you saw him at school, you wouldn't know, right? Unless you saw his scars all over his body. But he has gone through so much. And so we want to have something for parents that they can just read, and it's going to be fun and superheroes, like whatever. But just to explain to their child and their siblings, like, this is why. This is how God made you. This is why. And like, it's going to be okay, you know? So we're working on that. Just a little children's book. So we'll see how co-authoring goes with my husband.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Katie. Appreciate your time and your book. I've just got galley
print. Oh, that's so nice. I haven't even seen it printed out yet. I'm waiting for those hard copies any day now. So.
Well, for the record, I'm guessing that my assistant just made me a hard copy.
You have a good assistant. That's a good assistant right there. Look at that. I love it. The first
Everything is not fine. And it's an IVP book. Finding Strength in Life Gets Annoyingly Difficult. Comes out late September. Yes. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you.